नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपः कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम्। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं सागरजातं सगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितंश्च। हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धु जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकाकान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तुते। तप्त काञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्त। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
हरे कृष्णा। आई वुड लाइक टू वेलकम एवरीवन for this Sunday feast program. Very, very grateful to you that all of you have been able to come here despite this hot summer. You have come here. Of course, you are in an AC room here, so some comfort is provided. So, well, today it is my idea to speak about a great personality from Mahabharata, Vidura. Vidura is one of the most beautiful characters both in Mahabharata as well as in Srimad Bhagavatam. He has been glorified very much. So in the time that is available to me, I would like to briefly glorify him. So who is Vidura? Vidura is actually Yamadharma Raj, who was born in the material world as a result of a curse. So what is the brilliance of Vidura? What is his brilliance? This has been described in Mahabharata in a wonderful sloka. It says,
Brahaspati va deveshu, shukro va api asureshu, na tatha buddhi sampannu, yatha sa purusharshabha.
Purusharshabha. So this great personality, that is Vidura, his intellectual caliber was such that even Brahaspati, who is the preceptor of the demigods, nor Shukracharya, who is the preceptor of the demons, can compare with him. Such was the intelligent caliber of Vidura. So this is described in Mahabharata. So for Vaishnavas, he is a worshipable role model, and especially for devotional service and highest standards of morality. And actually there is a subject called as Vidur Niti, which is actually mother of Chanakya Niti. Chanakya Niti, many things are based on Vidura Niti. So such a great personality is Vidura. So how did Yamadharma Raj, who is actually one of the 12 Mahajans, how did he come down as Vidura. So there is a beautiful story which I would like to talk. So he became a Dasi Putra as a result of a curse that he received. And that curse he received from a great rishi called as Mandavya Rishi. So briefly, the story goes like this, that one day Mandavya Rishi was meditating in his ashram. Just outside the ashram, there was a tree. He was sitting under that and he was meditating deeply on the Supreme Lord. So when he was meditating there, a band of robbers, they came with stolen goods. And they came running there, and they saw Mandavya Rishi meditating. He was completely lost to the world. So they thought, you know, this is a nice place for us to hide our stolen goods. Now, as the robbers, you know, hid their stolen goods, they were followed by, you know, the police of the state, that is, the soldiers of the state. They came running after. And the leader of the soldiers asked Mandavya Muni, "Did you see anyone here running here and there?" Mandavya Muni was silent because he was in deep meditation. He was in yogic meditation. So he didn't hear the question in the first place. The leader of the soldiers again asked that question. Said, "Did you see anyone here running here and there? Tell us quickly." He was very insolent. Insolently he said that, "Tell us quickly so that we want to catch this person." Again, Mandavya Rishi was silent. No reply from him. So the commander, you know, got very irritated. In the meantime, his soldiers, they entered the ashram. And in the ashram, they saw the stolen goods, which the robbers had hid there. So when they saw the stolen goods inside the ashram, the soldiers came and reported to the commander that stolen goods are there in the hermitage. So immediately, the commander put two and two together, and he accused Mandavya Rishi. He said, "You are the ringleader of these robbers, and you have stolen the goods and kept it hidden in your ashram. So this needs to be reported to the king." So he went straight to the king and told the king that Mandavya Rishi, he is the ringleader of robbers. Mandavya Rishi is a great sage, ringleader of the robbers. He has stolen goods and hid it in his ashram. The king also didn't think too much. He was not used to using his mental faculties. He immediately gave an order. He should be, you know, a spear should be passed through him. It should be, in other words, punished like that. So immediately the commander came back and he immediately took a spear and pierced through the Mandavya Rishi's body. And when he pierced like that, did Mandavya Rishi die? He did not die. He was in deep yogic trance. He did not die. It didn't affect him at all. So after some time, there were other rishis who were nearby. They said, "What is this commotion going on in your ashram?" Then Mandavya Rishi came to his senses. He came to consciousness. He said that, "I really don't know, but this seems to be the king's doing. You know, the king's soldiers who are supposed to protect us, they have done this job. They have pierced me through this." So when the king came to know that Mandavya Rishi was still alive despite the spear being put through him, and then when he heard also that the other sages in the forest have come looking for him, he became panicky. He came running to the place where Mandavya Rishi was there. He begged his forgiveness. He said that this has happened. You know, we have not done it deliberately, but this has happened. So then, you know, Mandavya Rishi did not get excited with the king. He understood what the problem was. So then the king asked the soldiers to remove the spear. And this Mandavya Rishi thought, you know, that I must go to the authority. And who is the authority? Yamadharma Raj. He is the one who dispenses justice. Whatever things that we experience in this life, the justice part of it, you know, is dispensed by him. So he went straight to Yamadharma Raj. He had yogic power. He went straight to him and asked Yamadharma, said that, "What is this you have done? Why do you torture me? Why did you torture me like this?" So immediately Yamadharma Raj knew that he's a very yogic, you know, very powerful yogi. So he tried to soothe him. He said that, you know, O sage, that, you know, whatever acts we commit, you know, there is always a reaction. Action and reaction are equal and opposite, especially when you do wrong action. He said, because of that, So he said, that what wrong thing have I done? So at that time, Mandavarishi asked this question. Then Yamadharmaraj said that when you were a child, you know, you had pierced an ant with a sharp straw. Uska phal aaj mil raha hai. That's why, you know, it's pure now is being put through. Of course, whereas this demonstrates how the laws of nature work. But this was, Rishi became very angry with Yamadharmaraj. He said that an offense which a child has committed in all innocence, for that you have put me in this misery, so I hereby curse you. You be born as Dasiputra. And this is how Yamadharmaraj became Dasiputra. So then how did he become Dasiputra? So that's a question that needs to be answered. So, little bit into history of Mahabharata, bear with me. So, Maharaj Shantanu, his wife Ganga Devi, their only son was the great Bhishma Dev. So he never married, so there is no question of his having any children. So later on, Shantanu fell in love with Satyavati, and through Satyavati, he had, you know, two sons. Their names were Chitrangad and Vichitravirya. Now Chitrangad, you know, died prematurely in a battle with Gandharva of the same name. He died childless. Then Vichitravirya, he married two princesses. Their names were Ambika and Ambalika. And somehow or the other, Vichitravirya also died. This is Mahabharata, he died. So without any children. So this really created a lot of tension in the mind of Satyavati, who was responsible for all that happened. She was the one who had attracted Shantanu Maharaj first. So she felt guilty and she approached Bhishma Dev. He said, Bhishma Dev, you know, you had taken many vows some years ago. That time was different, but now the times are different. Now I order you, you marry, settle down, beget children. That is the way, you know, the Kuru dynasty will, you know, go ahead. Otherwise, Kuru dynasty will become extinct. So right away, you marry. Bhishma Dev said, there's nothing doing. I have taken a vow. There's no question of my deviating from that. Then, Satyavati, she invited her son, the great Vedavyasa. She said that, I have two widowed daughters-in-law, Ambika and Ambalika. You please, you know, father their children. So, Vedavyas obeyed the mother's instructions, and Amba and Ambalika also cooperated for the sake of continuance of Kuru dynasty. They agreed. And this Satyavati was a lady in great hurry. She immediately summoned Vedavyas. The idea had just been mooted. She called him. Vedavyas was, you know, in doing great austerities, and he had not kept himself, you know, clean. He was unkempt, unclean, and looking at him was looking grotesque, you know, not very nice looking personality. So he was there. He immediately came, and when he came, the mother Satyavati took him to Ambika's, you know, bedchamber. And as soon as they entered the bedchamber, looking at him, Ambika closed her eyes. And in the pregnancy that, you know, emerged, Vedavyas said that as soon as I came in, you closed your eyes in fear. Therefore, the son born out of this union will be blind. That is Dhritarashtra. So, after a month again, Satyavati again called Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva came after a month's time. He came, and then when he came, as soon as he came, this time he entered Ambalika, the sister's bedchamber. Now, Ambalika had been forewarned, you know, that he's not a very handsome looking person. She had been forewarned. So, she didn't close her eyes, but she became pale with fright. So, out of this union was born Pandu. Pandu means, you know, yellow. So, this was Pandu's. Pandu was born. So, this way, two attempts to generate, you know, healthy children failed. So, Pandu, then the third time, this Ambika, Satyavati again told Vedavyas that you try again, you know, with Ambika, because first two children, one is blind, the other one is pale. So some healthy son should be born. So at that point in time, Vedvyas said that, you know, I will come after some time. Let Ambika, you know, her son, Dhritarashtra, let him grow up a little. Then, you know, I'll come. So after some time, he came back. This time, Ambika was so very disgusted with Vedvyas' external appearance. Such a great personality, but his external appearance, you know, nauseated her. So she arranged for one of her faithful servants, you know, to substitute for her own self. So in this time, in Ambika's chamber, was this servant, very wonderful girl, endowed with all sattvic gunas. And Ambika, you know, adorned her with her own ornaments, and she was waiting in the bed chamber when Vedvyas came. As before Vedvyas entered, he knew that what had happened. But then he entered the chamber nevertheless. He said, this is will of the providence, so I have to surrender to that. So he came in. Then that servant girl received him very nicely, with a smile on her face. She, you know, served him very nicely, wonderfully prepared nice food items for him. So Vedvyas was very pleased. And out of that union was born this Vidura, the personality about whom we are talking today. So Vidura was born, and he told Satyavati that the firstborn, you know, Dhritarashtra, he will be blind, he will be very powerful, he will be very strong, he will have strength of 10,000 elephants, but he will be blind. Then the second person, Pandu, he is also very powerful, very handsome, like a god, but he will be pale, not keep good health. And the third one, that is Vidura, half-brother of Dhritarashtra and Pandu, no, he will be a great personality, spiritually a giant. He will be well-versed in Shastra, and everybody will look up to him. That will be Vidura. This way, the three brothers, you know, were born in the Kuru dynasty by the intervention of none other than Vedvyas himself. So after these sons were born, they were brought up very nicely. They were given wonderful education by Bhishma Dev. They were taught very well. Bhishma Dev looked after them very tenderly. And they grew up to be very young, you know, very nice, very strong people. And when they grew up, then question came, you know, of arranging, you know, for their marriage. So it was decided that Dhritarashtra would marry the Gandhar princess. Gandhari was very beautiful, and she agreed to marry Dhritarashtra. Many of you are familiar with this because of Mahabharata serial, but nevertheless, I am repeating things for my own purification. So he married Gandhari, and Gandhari, the moment she came to know that her husband-to-be is blind, she immediately blindfolded herself, and for rest of her life, she never ever opened her eyes. So she never saw the light of the day. That is Gandhari, such a great Pativrata. Then Pandu, for Pandu, two queens were arranged. One was Kunti Devi. I don't go into the detail because my hero is Vidura. So so Kunti Devi and Madri, they were married to him, married to Pandu. And because of some curse, Pandu started living in the forest. So both Kunti and Madri also lived with him in forest for many, many years. And there in the forest, it was realized again, he met with the curse Pandu, and he was told that if you try to procreate children, you are going to die immediately. So that curse was there. So it's a big worry. What is going to happen now? What is going to be the future of Kuru dynasty? At that time, Kunti Devi came up with a suggestion that I have a benediction from the Ruvasa Muni, and you know, I can, you know, pray to the demigods, and you know, I can have children this way. And that is how, you know, Dharmaraj, Yudhishthir, he was born, then Bhima was born, and then, you know, Arjuna was born, and then Madri felt left out. So she begged of her husband. She said that I also want to have children. Then Kunti very mercifully agreed to use the benediction which had been given by Durvasa and allowed Madri also to have two sons, two twins, that is twins, Nakula and Sadev. This way the five children were born. But among the five, the first one was born was Dharmaraj. In fact, he was the first one to be born in the Kuru dynasty. Naturally, therefore, he would be the next king. That was the understanding. But Gandhari also was pregnant. and when she was pregnant, and when she came to know that Yudhishthira is already born and he is going to be the next king, she became very envious. It is described that she banged herself on the stomach, you know, where she was pregnant, banged herself, and a lump of flesh emerged. She became miserable. She said, "What have I done?" When you do an action out of envy, it always is wrong. So she did not know what to do. Again, Vedavyas came there, and out of that lump of flesh, he divided by his, you know, intervention. 100 embryos were created, put in 100 different pots, and out of those, you know, 100 pots, they were all kept for a particular period, some 2-year period, something like that. And out of the first pot, who emerged? Duryodhan. So Duryodhan emerged, and when he emerged out of the pot, he started crying, you know, actually like jackals, you know, and like donkeys, your brain. Such a obnoxious sound he started creating that all the people around felt that this is very inauspicious for our dynasty. And Vidura particularly told, Dhritarashtra, that this boy is going to be the cause of disaster. You just reject him. Vidura was known for his being outspoken. He was always outspoken. He did not mince words. Even in the court, you know, he would address the king and, you know, he would speak his mind because he had nothing to fear. He was always interested in the welfare of everybody. It was not that he was interested in the welfare of only of Pandavas, but he would always speak. So Vidura recommended that Duryodhana should be, you know, thrown out. So, but anyway, already, you know, Dhritarashtra's attachment for Duryodhana had sprung, so it didn't happen. And after some time, there were 100 sons born out of Gandhari, and there were the 5 Pandavas. So these 5 Pandavas, you know, were living in the forest. They were an association of great sages, and they got wonderful training there in the forest, and they developed transcendental qualities of compassion, kindness, love, etc. And they were very happy living in the forest with Pandu. Unfortunately, Pandu succumbed to a temptation, you know, the temptation, the attraction for the opposite sex, which Rishabhdev says that this is the root cause of existence. So we became attracted to Madri, and unfortunately the curse took effect and Pandu passed away in the act. And Madri also, you know, she joined the funeral pyre as Sati because she was convinced that she had no capacity to bring up the Pandavas. She felt that only Kunti Devi should live. Kunti Devi also wanted to enter, but she said that for the sake of, you know, the 5 children, she sacrificed, she did not enter into the funeral pyre. And that's how the 5 Pandavas, you know, were brought up by Kunti with great love and with great affection. So they continued to live in the forest for quite some time, many years passed. And here in Hastinapur, the 100 sons were born. And Vidura, you know, he was the one who suggested to Dhritarashtra. He said that the Pandavas, especially everybody, you know, they are in the forest. It is time, Dhritarashtra, that you call them here and give them your, you know, kingdom, share. Because after all, Yudhishthira is the eldest in our dynasty. So eventually he has to become the king of the entire region. So you call them. So they were called, all of them were called there, one by one. They all came, and when they came, Dhritarashtra apparently, you know, showed some affection for them, but it was all external. He was all the time, he did not, because his son Duryodhan and other brothers hated the Pandavas, he also shared the same feeling. Externally he would appear to be diplomatically nice, but actually internally he did not like the Pandavas. Especially the Kauravas, the Kuru princes, did not like Bhim because of his immense strength. Because Bhima had immense strength, and you know, he would do all kinds of things. You know, even the Kauravas would climb up the trees. You know, he would shake the tree, and all of them would fall down like fruit. So they hated Bhim. So Duryodhana tried to, you know, poison Bhim. They fed him so much poison that, you know, anybody else would have died. So they threw him inside the river waters. And fortunately or unfortunately, by the will of providence, Bhima was saved there. The poison, you know, was neutralized by serpents biting him there. And eventually he was fed, you know, Amrit by the king of the serpents. And he came out of the water stronger than ever before. So more reason for, you know, Duryodhana to become, you know, more envious. This way they came. So they had several bad experiences at the hands of Yudhishthira. Everything looked, you know, hunky-dory, but, you know, basically inside they were burning with envy because of their qualities. So envy is something which is engendered not because of your doing something. Somebody else just becomes envious. There doesn't have to be any reason. You have not done any harm to anybody, but somebody else becomes envious of you because of the qualities that you have. So this way they were envious. This way the life went on. So there was this experiment which Duryodhan wanted to do. After Yudhishthira was, you know, crowned, so they decided one day that with Dhritarashtra's full approval, that they should go and spend some time in Varnavarta, where they built a house of lac, very inflammable. A particular person was hired just to build that, and Vidura came to know through his spies. He always well-wisher of the Pandavas, because they were devotees of Krishna. Vidura was a devotee of Krishna. So he always felt, you know, compassion for the Pandavas. So when he came to know that there is a sinister plan to, you know, burn all the Pandavas, you know, to death, so he arranged for that person, he arranged for a tunnel, you know, to be dug in that house for Pandavas' escape. And he also, you know, arranged for their escape via the river waters. He arranged a boat. He arranged that without mentioning to anyone. And he also warned Yudhishthira that this is what is going to happen. He warned him in a language which nobody else could have understood. This way, Yudhishthira came to know the sinister plan, and eventually they came out of, you know, that Varnavarta, you know, experience, house of, you know, like that, where they were burnt. They escaped totally. A tribal woman with her 5 sons, you know, she was burnt to death, but these people escaped. So here, Dhritarashtra and the company, you know, they started mourning, you know. Oh, my, you know, nephews, you know, they are all burnt. How sad. You know, all kind of acting from their part, histrionic. So they did that on their part, that was going on. But here the Pandavas escaped. They escaped, and it is to be understood that every such attempt on the part of Dhritarashtra to hurt the Pandavas, they came out, you know, stronger than before. So after the Varnavarta experience, these Pandavas, you know, they met actually Hidimbi. So Bhima, you know, forged a marriage with her. Ghatotkaj was born, who participated in the Mahabharata war. Then after that, they came to know that Drupada had arranged a Swayamvara. So in that Swayamvara again, long story, but in that Swayamvara again, Arjuna, you know, won Draupadi, and all the 5 brothers married Draupadi. So this way, these various, you know, attempts to destroy the Pandavas actually made them stronger, and basically they were devotees of the Lord. They took everything in their stride. They did not complain. They did not complain to Dhritarashtra, look what your sons are doing. They just bore everything. So after this experience, they once again, it was Vidura. Vidura said that, please, you call all of them back, including Draupadi, welcome them back, and let them now settle down. It is their right to be the rulers of Hastinapur. But you somehow or the other, you know, have propagated Duryodhana. So you please, you know, see that they are brought back and given, you know, their rights. So it was always Vidura who would, you know, intervene on behalf of the Pandavas. The Pandavas had not told him to do this, but he did it on his own, because he always was a justice was his, you know, basis for acting. So he did that. So the Pandavas came back. They came back. After they came back, then Dhritarashtra welcomed them. I said, oh, I'm so happy that all of you are alive. He thought they were all dead. All of you are alive. Now rule your kingdom. And long story again. Dhritarashtra said that I'll give you half the kingdom. Half the kingdom. So you rule, you know. And what was the kingdom that was given? Half the kingdom. What was the half the kingdom? It was Khandaprastha, which was nothing else but forest and desert land, wasteland actually, basically. So very generously, Dhritarashtra, before Bhishma Dev and Vidura, said that, take this land, you know, and rule it. Whereas everybody knew that this land was, you know, useless. He never suggested that you take Hastinapur and I'll give Khandaprastha to, you know, Duryodhana. No. But anyway, the Pandavas took it in their stride. They thought, let it be there. Krishna is on our side. So everything auspicious will be there. So they took that wasteland. They took that wasteland. And they, as they were going toward that, the Krishna, Lord Krishna was with them, with the Pandavas. So as they were going in, so Krishna, you know, actually summoned Indra. Indra, and then Indra came, and Indra, you know, said that, Krishna ordered Indra, he said that, you construct beautiful palaces for these Pandavas, my devotees, constructed beautiful. So beautiful, you know, palatial, you know, houses sprung up everywhere. Within a short time, the city which had no people whatsoever, it was a barren place, suddenly started getting populated. Many, many, many Brahmanas came there. Knowing that Yudhishthir Maharaj and his brothers, who are very, very spiritually inclined, they are going to be staying there, the city started getting filled up with Brahmanas and pious people. They all started coming to that place. And that place later on became Indraprastha. Indraprastha is still a part of Delhi. So they came to that place. So Khandaprastha became Indraprastha. So they came to Indraprastha and they started living there very nicely. And they performed, you know, all kinds of spiritual activities. They performed yajnas. And the whole place became, you know, very, very auspicious. And because Yudhishthira Maharaj was the king of the place, because of his piety and because of his spiritual characteristic, he started, you know, attracting all kinds of people there, especially craftsmen and everybody. And then there, while he was living in Indraprastha, it was proposed to him that there are many kings also whom Arjuna, Bhima, Nakula, Sahadev, they defeated them and they all became a part of, you know, Yudhishthira Maharaja's kingdom. So his kingdom, which began from a desert land, now expanded. In fact, it first became equal to Duryodhana's kingdom, then surpassed it also. So that was Indraprastha kingdom. So somebody proposed, Narad Muni proposed to Yudhishthira Maharaj that you have won so many kingdoms, why don't you perform, you know, Rajasuya Yajna? So Yudhishthira Maharaj initially did not accept the suggestion, but later on he accepted the suggestion. Why did Yudhishthira Maharaj agree to perform Rajasuya Yajna? So that question may arise in our mind. So Yudhishthira Maharaj agreed to perform the Rajasuya Yajna for one simple reason. The simple reason was that he wanted to honor the Supreme Lord Krishna. He wanted to make him, you know, receive the Agra Puja. So he wanted to give pride of place and he wanted to establish the entire world that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. So he wanted to prove it. So he agreed for the Rajasuya Yajna. And the Rajasuya Yajna required so much of wealth, so much of, you know, so many things that were required. All those were acquired by Arjuna, Bhima, Nakula, and all. So they acquired everything that was required. And many, many kings came and surrendered to Yudhishthira Maharaj. So he really became actually kind of a Chakravarti Samrat of that place. Everything came. And the Rajasuya Yajna, in the Rajasuya Yajna, Krishna, you know, was honored. That was the place where, you know, we know that Shishupal was killed. We won't go into all those details because our hero is still Vidura. So they went and all these were performed and so the Rajasuya Yajna was a great success. And Maya Danav had built a Maya palace there for the Pandavas' pleasure. And there, you know, Duryodhan also came for the Rajasuya Yajna with his brothers and everybody else. He came there. And he saw, he was given some services also. He saw the opulence of the Pandavas. And he became consumed by envy. Already he was envious. But seeing that now Yudhishthir Maharaj had such opulence that even the demigods, you know, would envy. That kind of opulence he had. So naturally, you know, Duryodhan became very, very upset. So that is the nature of the envy. When you see somebody else prosper, your envy, you know, also prospers. So he became very, very disturbed. Duryodhana became very disturbed. And by some, as the will of providence, Duryodhana, you know, in that Maya, you know, palace, he tripped and fell down in some water where there was no water. He thought it was water. All kinds of things. And Draupadi laughed. So this was an experience which Duryodhan just simply could not take it in his stride. He was tremendously upset. And after that experience, he came, he returned. He returned to Hastinapur. And when he returned to Hastinapur, Duryodhan was tremendously upset, greatly upset. And he approached Dhritarashtra. He told Dhritarashtra that I simply cannot bear to see the prosperity of Yudhishthir Maharaj. I simply can't take it anymore. Such prosperity that even demigods, you know, cannot match his opulence. Such prosperity he has. So I just simply cannot take it in my stride. I can't bear it. So Dhritarashtra said, so what do you want me to do? So then Karna suggested that we can fight with them and acquire it back. He said, you can't do this. You can't fight and get it back. Then there was another great man, great into inverted commas, Shakuni. So Shakuni, he was there. Shakuni said that, Duryodhan, why are you worried so much? Huh? They have all the wealth in the world. Yes, they have. That wealth soon will be ours. So he said that you just persuade your father, Dhritarashtra, to arrange a game of dice. Just propose that. Arrange a game of dice and nobody can defeat me in game of dice. And I will win everything that the Pandavas have in their command now, all the wealth, all the soldiers, all the armies, all the mansions, everything that they have will become yours, Duryodhan. Don't grieve now. Be happy. Be cheerful. This was the advice that Shakuni gave. So when you associate with people like Shakuni, this is what is going to happen anyway. So this happened. So he was unhappy. So Duryodhan cheered up. When you get people like this, you know, you naturally cheer up, you know, you require somebody. He cheered up. I said, oh, my grief was gone. And he said, all that you have to do is you have to persuade Dhritarashtra. You have to, it is your job. He told, so Duryodhana, he approached Dhritarashtra. And he told Dhritarashtra that, you know, father, you can't imagine the opulence of, you know, Yudhishthira Maharaj and the Pandavas. You just can't even imagine. It far surpasses what we have. It far surpasses what even the demigods have. Yeah, they are so well to do. So, but we have a method of winning everything from them back. Dhritarashtra said, what? How? How? He said that you have to do only one thing. You have to give us permission for a game of dice. Dhritarashtra knew that game of dice is not very religious, not approved. So he became terribly perturbed. He said that I'll ask, you know, noble Vidura. He used to consult Vidura for everything. So he called Vidura and he said that, these boys, you know, say Duryodhana and others, they want to invite their cousins, Pandavas, you know, for a game of dice. You please, you know, all that you have to do, you know, is... So I have already, you know, arranged for a big hall to be built for this game of dice to take place. So all that you have to do, you know, they have to invite them. So in fact, I would suggest that you go and invite the Pandavas for game of dice. So Vidura very strongly opposed. He said that this game of dice is absolutely irreligious. So dice, you know, leads, game of dice will lead to so many other things. And he warned Dhritarashtra. He said that this will be the beginning of the end. The game of dice will lead to disaster. So therefore, you know, you should immediately, you know, cancel the whole thing. Don't be interested. But Dhritarashtra said that, you know, I have already promised my son that. So now, you know, you don't come in the way. After all, he was the king, so Vidura had to accept that. But he told him that this will be the beginning of the end of the dynasty. This can lead to so much turmoil in your life that you will regret that you have permitted this thing to take place. But anyway, he was adamant, and the game of, you know, the Vidura himself was sent to Indraprastha to invite the Pandavas. There was a lot of resistance to begin with. They didn't want to come. There were discussions among the brothers. But eventually, Dharmaraj said that we have been invited by our uncle, we should go. So they came. And then the game of dice was played in that particular, you know, mansion that was created only for that purpose. So it went on. The game of dice started. Now, the game of dice was such that that Shakuni was a crafty person. He used all kinds of tricks, and every time, you know, Yudhishthira Maharaj would lose. There was no escaping that. So Yudhishthira Maharaj played game after game, and in every game he lost something. So he lost all his property, he lost all his palaces, he lost his kingdom, he lost everything, he lost all his brothers, he lost himself also. And eventually, you know, he pledged Draupadi. And then there was that very, very devastating, you know, experience for Draupadi, where she was, you know, disrobed right in the open court in presence of all the Kuru elders. Draupadi was disrobed. So that was a terrible experience. That was a catastrophe which actually led to eventually Mahabharata war. So this way, that experience was there, and the game of dice really created so many difficulties for everyone. So Vidura was very, very upset. He said that, you know, I had already warned you that this is going to happen, and it happened. And Draupadi was very much in the distress, but there was nothing that could be done for that. So Vidura had warned Dhritarashtra time and again. He said that, why are you seeking their wealth? Why don't you, if at all you want to seek their wealth, you can yourself earn that wealth by fighting. Why do you want to cheat this way? But Duryodhan, you know, rebuked Vidur, he insulted Vidur, and the game of chess took place. So every time Vidur tried to advise Duryodhan, Duryodhan, you know, would always, you know, turn a deaf ear, he would not hear anything. And he said that, you are always on the side of the Pandavas, we never take our side. This way he would complain. So Yudhishthira lost everything in the battle of dice, and after losing the game of dice to Shakuni, then Draupadi, you know, begged of all the elders, she begged of Dhritarashtra. So Dhritarashtra for some time felt compassion for Draupadi, and he gave back everything to the Pandavas. Then again Duryodhan and Shakuni prevailed upon Dhritarashtra to invite the Pandavas back for the second game of dice. This time, the wager was that, you know, one who loses the game has to go to the forest for 12 years and 1 year of Ajnatvas. That was the, you know, bet that was laid. Again, Yudhishthira thought that this is the will of the providence. So he accepted it. So they played the game of dice. And the second game, after the second game, after losing the second game of dice, Shakuni, for the second time, the Pandavas, you know, got ready to proceed to the forest. So it meant, you know, they had to wear, you know, bark, you know, clothes, and they had to go to the forest. So all five of them agreed, including Queen Kunti, they all agreed that they will go to the forest for 12 years and 1 year of Ajnatvas. So that was the arrangement. So Yudhishthir lost the game of dice twice. And first time he had a horrible experience, but still he agreed to pay. Because, you know, Yudhishthir respected all elders, and since it was the command of Dhritarashtra that the game of dice should be played, he agreed. So he played that. And that's how at that time Vidura spoke to Yudhishthir Maharaj. He told Yudhishthir Maharaj, he said that your mother, Queen Kunti, you know, she has also agreed to go with you, but I feel that she should not be with you. Let her stay with me during 13 years of your stay. Vidura felt compassion for Queen Kunti. He said that she has suffered so much in life. Now again, you know, 13 years, she will be wandering here and there. So please let her stay with us. So Yudhishthir Maharaj was very grateful to Vidura for making this arrangement for his mother. So Vidura was always, you know, forthright. So Dhritarashtra, after the game, second game of dice was played and all the Pandavas were sent to the forest, Dhritarashtra was an unhappy person. His heart, you know, was not in the... His heart was miserable. He had some kind of a guilt complex for having been partial, you know, to his own sons, and, you know, been very negligent towards his brother's son. He had always that guilt in his mind. So he called Vidura, and he said that, you know, I am very unhappy from within my heart. So please, you know, you advise me what I should do. So Dhritarashtra would always seek Vidura's advice and do what he wanted. So that is how he was constituted. So he asked, so he said that, but Vidura was always objective. He said that religion as well as economic development, both these depend on virtue. The success of a kingdom also depends on virtue. So therefore, you know, what you should do is that you should cherish Pandu's sons as your own sons, as well as your own sons, both should turn. So he said that you destroyed virtue, he told Dhritarashtra. You destroyed virtue when you allowed the game of dice. Because you allowed the game of dice to be played, all virtue has gone. Therefore, you know, you'll never ever be happy in life. The only way in which you can atone for what you have done and earn praise is by returning the Pandavas' kingdom. Return to them honorably and be satisfied with what is rightfully yours. So this is not what Dhritarashtra wanted to hear. He wanted, you know, just as, you know, when you have a headache, you apply Amrutanjan, you know, time being, you know. But the headache may still persist. So he was like that. He wanted Vidura's advice like a balm, you know. So he would hear him, trouble him, hear him, and then do what he wanted. That's what how he was constituted. So this is not what Vidura wanted. So at that time, Vidura continued further. He said, "Oh Bharat Shrestha," he told his address his brother. He said that at one time, you know, when Duryodhan was very young, when he was just born, I had told you to abandon him. You didn't listen to me. If you had abandoned, all these, you know, dirty things would not have taken place. You didn't abandon. But you can still do it. Cast aside Duryodhan. You want to know what will make you happy, so I am telling you what will make you happy. Cast aside Duryodhan. Leave him aside. And then let your sons, you know, let them serve the Pandavas. No. Vidura is speaking from his heart, his suggestions. Suggestions may not be welcome, but he's still suggesting. And let Dushyasan, you know, apologize to, you know, let him apologize to Bhima. And this way, and let Dushyasan apologize to Draupadi in the courtroom. You call everyone and right in the presence of everyone, let him apologize to Draupadi. So these are some of the suggestions that I'm making. For you to become, you know, mentally peaceful. These are the suggestions that were made. So Dhritarashtra's, you know, anger, you know, it boiled over. He said, this is just, I can't take any more. He liked to talk to Vidura. He loved Vidura also in his own way. But when Vidura suggested things, you know, what are the right, he would not be able to accept it. So Dhritarashtra's anger literally boiled over. So, and he said to him, Vidura, it seems that you always want to side with the Pandavas. You always want to side with them. So, and you are always against my sons. Actually, that was not the case. Vidura was actually giving advice that was the right thing to give, but he took it in that sense. So this way he said that that kind of a envy in Dhritarashtra's heart, you see right in the very first verse of Bhagavad Gita. Mamakaha Pandavas Chaiva Kim Akurvata Sanjaya. Very first verse. Mamaka. My children. And Pandavas. So he always discriminated. So I hold you. He told Vidura, I hold you in great esteem, Vidura. I love you very much. But then today, whatever advice you are giving, it seems to me to be crooked. I don't accept it. I don't accept your advice. And you may stay here if you want with me, or if you want, you can leave. I no longer need your advice. So Vidura, completely detached person, man of spiritual heights, he immediately accepted. He left and he went to the forest where the Pandavas were living with Draupadi. He immediately went there. He went to Kamyakavan, where at that time the Pandavas were living, residing. So when he reached there, Vidura, when they saw Vidura, they literally shed tears of joy that their uncle, loving uncle, has come to meet them. So they all welcomed him with great joy, and they welcomed him and they said, "We're so happy to see you." And Vidura came there. He was just sitting. He told them why he had to leave Dhritarashtra. He gave them the reason. He said, "I gave him the right advice. He didn't accept it." So he told them. And just when he was narrating these things to him, Sanjaya came. Sanjaya is the one, he's a familiar figure to us in Bhagavad Gita. He's the one who tells Dhritarashtra what is happening on the battlefield. So Sanjaya, the charioteer of Dhritarashtra, came there to Kamyakavan. He came there and he told Vidura, he said that, "Vidurji, Dhritarashtra is miserable without you. So you please come back. He has had sleepless nights and is completely miserable. He is begging of me to bring you back." So this Dhritarashtra and Vidura relationship was some kind of love and hate kind of a relationship, Because Vidura would always speak the truth, be on the side of law, be on the side of justice. That is how he was. He was Yamadharmara born. But Dhritarashtra would never accept that. So it went on. So he said that, Sanjaya said that, "If you don't come, he says that he is going to die." Then Vidura thought, I had reason to leave him and come, but he's my elder brother. He's blind. So he felt compassion for him. He said, "Okay, I'll come with you." So he went back to, the court. So this way, the time passed. So when the period of Vanvas and Ajnatvas got over, we won't go into details of that, Lord Krishna visited Hastinapur as Shantidut. You all know the story. We won't go into details of that also. So Dhritarashtra arranged, he ordered elaborate arrangements for welcoming Krishna when he came as Shantidut. He said that, "Oh Krishna, you live in the palace of Dushasan." It was the most lavish place in Hastinapur. He said, "We live there. All wonderful arrangements will be made." But Krishna refused to, go there. He refused to go there. One more reason was that, Kunti Devi also was staying with Vidura. So Krishna wanted to meet Vidura anyway. Vidura was his devotee. He wanted to be with his devotees. And therefore, there is that beautiful song which I want to sing. But Vasu Ghosh, he reads that, Sundara Kundala Nayana Vishala. So in that he says, "Duryodhana ka bhogana kayo, rukho saga vidura ghar kayo." He says that, "Aise prema pujari, radhe sham sham sham." So he said that Krishna loved to be with his devotee, Vidura, whose living standards were very simple, with the man of God. He said, "I prefer to stay with him." So Krishna preferred to, he rejected all the opulent facilities which Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra and company were making for him, and he preferred to come to Vidura's place. Vidura, when he saw Krishna coming in, he started crying, tears of joy fell from his eyes and he welcomed him with so much love. He pressed his feet. He, in all possible way, you know, he showed his love for the Supreme Lord Krishna. So this way, so next day, you know, and actually Vidura told Sri Krishna that, oh Lord, please don't go to the court of Duryodhana. It is possible that he will try to humiliate you. It is possible that he will try to insult you. The best thing for you, you know, is not to go there. Avoid going to the court. But Krishna had come on a peace mission. He had come as Shantidut. So he said that I have to do my work. So Krishna went nevertheless. And when he went to the court of Dhritarashtra, there, you know, Duryodhana, with all his friends, you know, he tried to actually arrest Krishna. You can imagine trying to arrest Krishna. So that was Duryodhana's and his friend's audacity. So audacious. So that Duryodhana said that I'm going to. So this way, but Krishna showed his, you know, Vishwa Roop. He showed his Roop. And that dazzling, you know, brightness, nobody could tolerate even to see. Nobody could open eyes, excepting, you know, the Bhishma Dev, Vidura, Sanjay, select few people, Dronacharya. They were able to see the Lord, but all others, the brightness of the Vishwarupa was so much that they were overwhelmed. They could not even see. So this way, Krishna, Arjuna, Duryodhana, you know, insulted Krishna, but Krishna laughed it away. He just, you know, withdrew his that form. Vishnu Roop, he withdrew, and then he just laughed it off, and with Satyaki and Krutavarma, you know, holding their hands, he just walked away. So the peace mission was a failure. Now, Krishna knew it in advance, but Krishna nevertheless wanted to show that he made peace overtures first. He meant it also, but such was the villainy of Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra's, you know, compliance with whatever he did, that eventually the peace mission was foiled and Krishna went back. So after the attempted humiliation of Krishna in the court, Dhritarashtra became very panicky. He knew now that war is there, peace mission is off, so war is going to come. So he became very panicky. He became very worried. So he called all his ministers, he called everyone to his court, and he said, he wanted to know how to avert the disaster. The disaster is going to be there, he knew, but he wanted to avert it. So he talked to Bhishma Dev. Bhishma Dev said that, O king, our fate is sealed. We have already tried to insult Krishna. So trying to insult Krishna, you try to abuse Keshav. So he said that, who is worthy of even demigod worship, you have insulted such a great personality. Now we have to be prepared for war. He looked at Drona, then he looked at, you know, Krupacharya. Both of them said that we agree with whatever Bhishma Deva has said. Now war is going to be there. War will be there. That's what he said. So Duryodhan was the only one who became very happy that war is going to be there. He thought that, you know, he has such warriors at his command, Bhishma Dev, you know, and Dronacharya, Krupacharya, Karna, so many. We are going to destroy these Pandavas in this war, and, you know, we will be the emperors of the entire planet Earth. That was his thinking. That is what he thought. So he was happy. He was exalted. So Vidur saw Duryodhan, the smirk on his face, you know, he was so happy. So Vidur saw that, and Vidur could not tolerate that. He said, he got up and he addressed Duryodhana. He said, you must now return Yudhishthir's his legitimate share of the kingdom. Now, knowing all the background, Vidura has that courage to speak truth at all times. So he said that you must return the share of the kingdom which you have. So you give it to Yudhishthir back. And he said, and then he addressed Dhritarashtra. He said that, O ruler of the earth, by your inaction and by supporting offense personified Duryodhana, you have actually brought destruction to the Kuru race. But your son Duryodhana is envious of Krishna. Because of this,
you are also devoid of all auspiciousness. There will be nothing auspicious in your life because you know you have insulted Krishna. So relieve yourself of this ill fortune. Relieve yourself of this problem. So as soon as possible by punishing Duryodhana. Getting, you are the king, so you can do what you want. And thus do your whole family good. Otherwise we are all doomed. So Duryodhana could take it no more. He had tolerated these such kind of suggestions from Vidura many times. He took it no more. So from his childhood he always felt that somehow or the other, you know, Vidura was siding the Pandavas. In a sense he was not wrong, because Pandavas were, you know, devotees of the Lord and Vidura wanted to support the devotees. So it seemed that he had no affection for him or his brothers. So Duryodhana leapt up. He jumped, you know, from his wherever he was sitting, and in rage, you know, he became so outraged by Vidur's candid, truthful, but to him not very nice suggestions. So he got up. His lips were trembling with anger, and he said, this is famous. He said, who asked him, that is Vidura, who asked Vidura to come here, this son of a maid servant, Dasiputra? This is an insult in the open assembly which Duryodhana did, maid servant. So this deceitful person is no friend of the Kurus. He is so crooked that he works secretly in the interest of the enemy, plotting against those who have supported him. Toss him out of the palace and leave him only with his breath. This is described very nicely in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Those who are interested, you can read the Bhagavatam in the first canto. This is all there. Whatever I am narrating is based on Bhagavatam only. So, says they toss him out. Let him live only with his breath. Let him not carry anything. This was actually then an opportunity for which Vidura was waiting. Vidura was always worried that if ever a war breaks out between the Pandavas and Kauravas, what is he going to do? So he definitely did not want to fight against the Pandavas. He definitely did not want to fight at all. He did not want a war. He was a peaceful person. He was waiting for this opportunity, and he felt that Krishna, the Lord, you know, had given him an opportunity. He just, you know, he just got up from his wherever he was sitting. Dhritarashtra raised a hand, you know, to restrain him. But Vidura just got up and he started walking towards the gate, you know, he started walking there. And there, he had a bow with him. That bow he took and he kept it leaning against the door, indicating that he was not going to fight. That he was not going to fight. He was Kshatriya, but he said, I'm not going to fight. So he kept the bow against it and he just walked out of the palace and started walking towards the north side where most of the rishis' ashrams were located in Hastinapur. He just started walking. So when Mahabharata war took place, he took no sides. He was just moving. He was just walking. He was like an avdhut, not worried about what dress he was wearing, what he was getting to eat. He just was going from one place to the other, one place to the other. Whatever came his way, he would accept it. He would sleep on the floor. And he visited all the holy places, always constantly meditating on the Supreme Lord Krishna, always thinking of Krishna. So he appreciated how the energy of the Supreme Lord was working. How, you know, he was saved, you know, from fighting in the war. He appreciated that. So a question may arise in our mind that why did not Vidura directly go to Dwarka and approach Krishna there, you know. He could have. He was such a wonderful devotee. But Vidura did not go toward Dwarka. He thought to himself that, you know, I have associated with Dhritarashtra and I have associated with Duryodhana for such a long time, you know. So I am completely, my consciousness is completely polluted. Therefore, I have to purify myself. Those who are very pure in their consciousness always think like this, that they are impure. But he thought that, you know, my association with these wild people has been so long that I must go to many holy places. Therefore, he went to holy places. He traveled for 12 long years. He went to different places.
And when he went to Prabhas, he heard there that the annihilation of Yadus had taken place. He heard there that the Lord, you know, had also, you know, completed his pastimes. He had heard that. But he didn't stay there anywhere. He just started walking. And eventually, he came to Yamuna River. When he came to Yamuna, he saw that the great devotee of the Lord and Lord's cousin, Uddhava, was staying there. This is described in the third and fourth cantos. He went there, he saw Uddhava, and when he saw Uddhava, he was such a beautiful person, looking like Krishna himself, but such a great personality, who was actually descended directly, you know, from the spiritual world to assist in pastimes. So he met Uddhava, and seeing Uddhava and his, you know, the way he talked to Vidura, he felt that Uddhava had already reached, you know, the perfectional stage of full love of Krishna. He had already reached that stage. So after hearing from Uddhava about the annihilation of his friends and relatives, Vidura pacified his mind. He felt distress when he heard that all the, you know, Yadus had perished, and heard that all his relatives were killed in the Mahabharata war. He was not happy about it. So he was unhappy. But still, by using his, you know, philosophical, you know, spiritual understanding, he pacified himself. So when Uddhava was about to depart, Vidura begged of him. He said that you had association of Lord during his, you know, pastimes, ending pastimes. So will you please impart to me the transcendental knowledge which Lord Krishna gave you? Uddhava had stayed with Krishna for a long time. There was the period when the Uddhava Gita and so many things are described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He said that, will you please directly give me all the knowledge that you have received? So Uddhava was very much younger than Vidura in age wise, though he was more knowledgeable and he was a devotee in the first place, but still he felt that there would be maryada vyatikram, it is called maryada vyatikram, one who is older. We normally don't preach to such people. So he said that he asked Vidura to take instructions from Maitreya Rishi. So Maitreya Rishi is the Rishi from whom you are supposed to take instructions. So the night before Uddhava departed, you know, for Badrikashram, where Krishna had asked him to go and pass on the message to Naranarayan Devatas, whatever he wanted to narrate. So Uddhava revealed some things to Vidura, and in that revelation he told him that Krishna had remembered Vidura. So when he heard that the Lord, Supreme Lord, had heard him, had remembered him during his, you know, ending lilas, so he became ecstatic, you know, started crying. So after that, Uddhava, you know, left for Badrikashram, and then after spending few days on the banks of Yamuna, Vidura also went to the mouth of Ganga. So maryada vyatikram is that when you try to preach to somebody who is much older than you. So it was decided that Maitreya Rishi, you know, was very senior in age. And who was Maitreya Rishi? Maitreya Rishi was actually Maitreya Rishi was actually the friend of Vedavyas, and he was also a disciple of Parashurmi. So he said that he is the right person. He was also there with the Lord. So he is the right person from whom you can, you know, understand. So he went there, so Maitreya Muni then spoke to Vidura. Vidura surrendered to him. He accepted him as his spiritual master. He wanted to accept Uddhava, but Uddhava did not agree to be his spiritual master. So he surrendered to Maitreya Rishi, and after surrendering to Maitreya Rishi, then he spoke to Vidura on various topics. Those various topics comprise the content of the third and fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. There are many topics that were covered by Maitreya Rishi, great personality, who narrated all the pastimes of devotees. What were the pastimes that he devoted? Just briefly, he spoke about birth of Lord Brahma. He spoke about the creation of the four Kumaras and others. He spoke about Jaya Vijay, cursed by the four Kumaras. He spoke about appearance of Lord Varahadev. He spoke about further creations of Lord Brahma. He spoke about Lord Kapil Dev, the son of Kardam Muni and Devahuti. He spoke about the descendants of daughters of Kardama Muni. He spoke about the sacrifice that Daksha Prajapati performed. He spoke about Dhruva Maharaj, which is in the fourth canto. Then King Anga, Vena, Prithu Maharaj, and Prachinibari, and Prachyatas. So all these topics described in great detail in the third and fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam were narrated by Maitreya Rishi day after day. And Vidura would ask so many pertinent questions and they would be answered. So Vidura was ever anxious to keep hearing Shravanam. Shravanam is the basis of spiritual progress. Shravana Kirtana, Smarana Vandana, Pada Sevana, Dasyare, Pujana Sakijana, Atma Nivedana. So these are the Navabhidha Bhakti, of which, you know, Shravanam constitutes the basis. That is how, you know, we perfect our spiritual life. And therefore Srila Prabhupada has introduced Shravana and Kirtana as a part and parcel of our, you know, regimen here in all ISKCON temples. That is what we do, Shravanam and Kirtanam. You hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is something very, very integral that we hear. So Maitreya Rishi did that. So after hearing all these topics, spent over a number of days, then Vidura left the association of Maitreya Rishi. He left his association, and after leaving his association, he first of all, you know, prostrated himself before his spiritual master Maitreya Rishi, and crying tears, you know, of ecstasy, he said that, "O great mystic and devotee, by your causeless mercy I have been shown the path of liberation from the world of darkness." So he's very grateful to the spiritual master Maitreya Rishi for having shown him the correct path. So he was a realized person by the time he finished with Maitreya Rishi. So after offering his obeisances, Vidura took permission of his guru, and he said that, "Now, you know, I want to go back to Hastinapur." So meantime, the war has taken place. Yudhishthir Maharaj has been crowned the emperor of the whole planet, and Dhritarashtra and Gandhari and Kunti are living with Yudhishthir Maharaj in his palace. And Vidura, who loved Dhritarashtra but who did not like his ways, his attachment to his son, he thought that now that the war is over, time has come for me to go back to him also. But then he couldn't have straightaway gone there, so he went to first Yudhishthir Maharaja's palace. So when he went there, so it is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first canto. I'm just reading the translation of some of the verses so that you can appreciate how joyous. So when they saw Vidura return to the palace, Maharaj Yudhishthir, his younger brother, Dhritarashtra, Satyaki, Sanjay, Krupacharya, Kunti, Gandhari, Draupadi, Subhadra, Uttara, Krupi. Names are familiar to all of you. So all the Mahabharata characters. Many others all hurried to him in great delight. They are so happy to see Vidura come after so many years in their midst. So it so appeared that they had regained their consciousness. As if they were dead all this time, but now I'm seeing Vidura, now they have become alive. So due to the anxieties and long separation, they all cried, they shedding tears out of affection. So after Yudhishthira Maharaj made him comfortable, made him sit. So after, you know, Vidura ate, you know, sumptuously and took, you know, sufficient rest. Then, you know, Yudhishthira Maharaj said that, "You please now speak something about your experiences during the yatra." It's not that as soon as they came, usko hila ke usse, you know, ask him, what was your experience? Where were you? Where had you gone? They treated him so nicely, you know, allowed him to take rest. And then finally, after feeding him nicely, then Yudhishthira Maharaj asked, you know, "What was your experience? Where all had you gone?" So Maharaj Yudhishthira said, "My uncle, do you remember how you always protected us along with our mother? It was Vidura who had saved them from Lakshagraha debacle. They would have been killed there and then. How you, all sorts of calamities, you always helped us, O uncle. So your partiality like wings of a bird saved us from poisoning and arson. So while traveling on the surface of the earth, then Yudhishthira asked, how did you, you know, maintain your livelihood? At which holy places and pilgrimage sites did you render service? So thus Yudhishthira, you know, asked so many questions to which he replied. And then Yudhishthira Maharaj says something very beautiful. That verse is worth quoting.
Bhaktavida Bhagavata Tirtham Bhuta Swayam Vibho Tirthi Kurvanti Tirthani Swanta Stena Gadabhruta.
He says that, he tells Vidur that wherever you go, wherever your feet touch, that becomes Tirthasthana. He is telling Vidura, there was no need for you to go for so many years from one Tirthasthana to other Tirthasthana. Wherever you go, because you are carrying Krishna in your heart, wherever you go, that itself is Tirthasthana. So you have converted everything to Tirtha. My Lord, devotees like your good self are verily holy places personified. Because you carry the personality of Godhead within your heart, you turn all places into places of pilgrimage. Yudhishthira then asked, you must have visited. Then he did not straight away ask him. That is what he wanted to ask very first time, but he did not ask. You must have visited Dwarka. So in that holy place, there are our friends, you know. He's not asking about Krishna. There are our holy friends and well-wishers and descendants of Yadu who are always wrapped in service of Krishna. You might have seen them. You might have heard about them. So will you please, would you like to tell your experiences? So thus, being questioned by Maharaj Yudhishthira, Vidura, very, very, so sweetly, he narrated all his experiences, but he did not refer to the passing away of the Yadu dynasty. Yadu dynasty, you know, dying. He did not mention that at all. Why? Because he felt that the Pandavas are so much, you know, in love with Krishna, so much they, you know, worship him, that anything, you know, pertaining to the passing away of the Yadu dynasty will hurt them and cause them anguish. Therefore, barring that particular, you know, subject, Vidura narrated all his experiences, all his pastimes. He says, my dear king, I will not read the verses. I don't know how much time I have also. My dear king, please get out of here. Then Vidura address, after question answers with Yudhishthira, Vidura addresses Dhritarashtra. Now, Vidura had not come to Hastinapur to enjoy the hospitality of Chakravarti's Samrat Yudhishthira Maharaj, to enjoy him. So he had not come with that intention at all. The reason why he came was that he wanted to make his brother Dhritarashtra, you know, he wanted to make him a devotee. He wanted him to be elevated to spiritual consciousness. That is why he came. So he says, my dear king, please get out of here immediately. Do not delay. Just see how fear has overtaken you. Your father, brother, well-wishers and sons, all are dead now. Nobody is living. Everybody is dead. They all passed away. You yourself have expended the major portion of your life. You are not getting younger day by day. You are also getting older. Your body is now overtaken by invalidity and you are living in the home of another. So somehow or other, Dhritarashtra, his worldly consciousness was such that despite all his sons being killed in the Mahabharata war, still his asakti for life, his asakti for wanting to enjoy, that had not gone, deteriorated. He still had that propensity to enjoy. Therefore, virtually Vidura is shaking him, you know, telling him that enough is enough. You have spent so much time. All your relatives are dead. All your sons are dead. What is there for you to live here? You are actually living on crumbs that are, you know, thrown to you by Bhima. Bhima is throwing, you know, some rotis at you and, you know, you are eating the rotis. So he is using a language which actually devotee would not use. especially a very loving, kind devotee like Vidura, he would not use such language. But he had to use such a language because he wanted to shake him up, awaken him from his, you know, consciousness, you know, just like a dead body almost, Dhritarashtra. So he shook him up and told him that you are living on charity. What is this? Time has come for you now to, as they say, uttishtata jagrata prapyavara nibodhata. So get up from your, you know, laziness. Get out and just leave this palace immediately. Just get out. Go to the forest and perfect your life. So when Vidura tells Dhritarashtra this so emphatically, with so much candor and so much, you know, love in his heart, that Dhritarashtra, for the first time in his life, is immediately shaken up. He accepts whatever Vidura has told him. And immediately thereafter, Vidura, the very next day, without informing anybody, and Vidura tells him, don't inform anybody, because people will, you know, show him, where are you going, which forest, where, no, nothing, not inform anyone, anything, just leave immediately, without any attachments. So go. So he leaves Hastinapur with Gandhari and also say Kunti. They went to the forest, and they went there, and then Dhritarashtra practiced, you know, Ashtanga yoga, very nicely performed. Vidura also was with them, he guided them. And there, you know, in that forest, Bhagavatam describes it in detail. So there in that forest, you know, Dhritarashtra, out of his own body, you know, he created a fire which, you know, burnt him, and also the thatched hut in which he was living burnt him also. And Gandhari joined there, and it is described that Kunti Devi, you know, she also was, you know, burnt in a forest fire. So all of them just, you know, left their bodies in spiritual consciousness. Now Vidura was standing there when Dhritarashtra was burning to death there. So it is described in the Bhagavatam that Vidura was at once happy and also unhappy. Why happy? Because at long last his brother, elder brother Dhritarashtra, had understood that he this material life is not all in all. So he had realized. So he went for, you know, yogic liberation. Ashtanga yoga took him to yogic liberation. So he understood that at long last, you know, he has understood. That made him happy. Why was he unhappy? He was unhappy because, you know, he could not make him into a devotee. So he wanted Dhritarashtra to become a devotee. So we are in Krishna consciousness. Our goal of life is not to, you know, attain, you know, liberation. That is not our goal of life. Our goal of life is to become devotee and serve the Supreme Lord, serve Krishna very nicely. That is our goal of life. Ask any devotee which, you know, whether you want, you know, Salokya Mukti or Sarupya Mukti or Sashti, you will say no. Don't want any Mukti, don't want liberation. Want only Premamaya Bhakti of the Supreme Lord. So that is what a devotee aspires for. And because, you know, Dhritarashtra did not get that, he felt somewhat unhappy. But at the same time, he was very happy because, you know, at long last, he had accepted a path which was Godward. So that way, the Mahabharata, that way Srimad Bhagavatam describes the experiences of Dhritarashtra. So we see therefore that Vidura himself, it is described that there are some reports that he stood under a tree and, you know, gave up he practiced austerities greatly, and then eventually he also gave up his body in highest spiritual consciousness, constantly thinking of the Supreme Lord Krishna. So this way, I have tried to describe to you about Vidura. The information was rather extensive. I have tried to cut it short to the extent possible. For me, Vidura is one of the most respectable characters of Mahabharata and also Srimad Bhagavatam. Because of Vidura, we have the third and fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because of him, Maitreya Rishi spoke about the topics which are contained in the third and fourth canto. So how grateful we should be towards Vidura. So this was my offering to this hero, great hero Vidura. Not because he fought any battles with bow and arrow, but because of his supreme, you know, transcendental knowledge with which he wanted to help everyone. Hare Krishna.
So I'd like to thank His Grace Vrishabhanu Prabhu by loudly chanting three times Hari Bol. Thank you very much for your wonderful class. So I would like to request devotees to kindly be seated so that we can make the temple announcement.